The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com. This is Steve Kim on the Apologetics Canada podcast, beatboxing your way into 2017. Terry, can I get a whoop, 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 whoop,
whoop? Oh, the things we do.
Welcome to 2017.
Oh, man.
That was priceless.
We can be hired.
Yeah, the things that I do for Apologetics Canada. Oh, my goodness.
Man, I want to be like you.
All right. Well, welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Oh.
And
yeah, can I get some crowd in the background there, Terry?
I forgot I was supposed to do that, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Somebody didn't cue me in. Terry Crosby here.
All right. So we're starting a new year, 2017.
It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we could have that, though, Terry. Every time I say something, you can kind of have like a crowd in the background.
How's that?
I like it, man. You just follow me around every time I say anything. Glad that you're with us on the show, though. Do you guys have a good good New Year's?
I had a great Christmas and New Year's, yeah.
Well, yes. both
of my family was sick. Yeah,
we were all sick. And then on the day we were flying in, something happened. So we had to sit on the runway for like 2 hours. And Tevin was getting tired and upset. So he was crying. And there were some other kids crying. Anyway, we
by the way, that is the worst.
Yeah.
Being stuck on a plane with a small, sick, crying child.
Yeah.
Oh.
But the thing too is, you know, if anybody gets upset, I think it would be helpful to understand that the parents of the child are just as embarrassed as you are upset. And so just give them some grace. Okay. Well, thankfully, nobody was harping on us. In fact, everybody was very understanding around us.
Like, that's a long time sitting there with a kid.
Yeah.
You should be understanding.
I was at the Imagine conference out in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
which was fantastic. I'm sure some of that will get brought up in our conversation today, but I want to give a shout out to Power to Change. They are Campus Crusade for Christ in Canada. They go by the name Power to Change. Fantastic organization. We love working with them and look forward to
doing that. So what did you talk about when you were out there?
I had a number of talks that I did. I did a talk on divide and hiddenness. Hey, God, why is it not more obvious that you exist? Do all religions lead to God? And then the big one is I gave two keynote addresses on dehumanization. And really, I was given an argument for God using dehumanization and was very well received. I'm finding that that's a powerful argument, and you're going to hear more about that as we're in the midst of producing a new series, like the Thinking Series, but it's called The Human Project. We're going to start filming that this summer, and I'm super pumped about
that. Whoop, whoop.
Can I get a whoop, whoop?
Whoop, whoop. Already, we're getting some pretty sweet ideas flowing here, so I'm really looking forward to that, too.
Yeah, pray for us, and if you have large sums of money that you want to give to a podcast, then make sure you do that.
Yeah. And you met somebody over the Christmas break that we're really excited to.
Yeah, I had a very interesting Christmas. Paul Copan, years ago, was introduced to this a girl by the name of Summer, who lives in Syria.
Is it Summer or Samar? I don't know.
Her name, if you were to pronounce it the way it's spelled, is Samar, but it's actually Summer.
Okay.
So, oddly enough, that's a Syrian name or in an Arabic name. So she does Muslim ministry in Syria. She even flew to India and did some training with RZIM, Ravi Zacharias' ministry, and then finds herself, you know, as a Syrian in the midst of this war.
Mm.
And she was working in the church and spent years helping get Syrians out of Syria. And one of those people that she helped her get out.
Right.
And Paul Copan put me into contact with her, and she had no place to spend for Christmas, so she spent Christmas with our family, and she has just an incredible testimony of what God's been doing in her life. She has some incredible insight into the whole Syrian refugee crisis, and the mindset of Syrian refugees, and just what you can do to engage with Syrians, both Muslim and non. And so we're actually going to have her speak at the Apologetics Canada conference. She's going to be doing a breakout session. So if that intrigues you, if you'd like to meet her, wonderful girl. And she'll be there at the conference. We're excited about it.
Yeah, and so yeah, if you guys want more information on that, just go to apologeticscanadaconference.com.
She's been here in Canada for 3 months, something like that.
Yeah. So if that at all intrigues you, come on out. All right, so let's jump into things. We've got a bit of a bizarre topic to talk about. Last year, we saw the legalization of same-sex marriage across the board in the United States. In Canada, it's been in effect for, you know, now over 10 years. It was 2005, I think, that the Civil Marriage Act was passed, allowing same-sex unions and things like that. But the interesting thing is the social conservatives have always been warning, if you will, issuing a warning. It's going to be a slippery slope. And we're finding that that is the case. And there are some pretty fringe stuff that's happening out there. I mean, here's one. I mean, forget homosexuality for a second. Have you heard of ecosexuals?
I hadn't until you sent me a link to it. Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
And now my mind will never be the same again. Yeah,
no, with pictures.
With pictures. I had never heard about this before.
Yeah.
But I must confess, it's difficult these days to be surprised by anything. Mm-hmm. This came close to surprising me.
Yeah.
But more is just like, yeah, it's kind of one of those slippery slopes. Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah, this, I could see that this is a direction that people in our culture would head.
Yeah.
And
it just seems the question is like, what's next? Just like anything can almost go these days, right? Mm-hmm.
Why don't we explain it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Terry, you want to take a crack at it?
Well, ecosexual, they are in love with the earth is what it is, right?
So we have a name for those kind of, like when I was growing up, we would call those tree huggers.
Tree huggers, yeah. We're beyond that.
Yeah,
now.
This is like tree hugging to, taking that to a whole new level.
Now, no word of a lie here, or not to be, you know, overly graphic or rude, but this isn't hugging trees. This is having sexual relations with trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, and or having sexual relations like out in open, like under the sky kind of thing, like in nature, that sort of thing.
So it could be with any kind of natural thing, flowers. I don't know how far we want to go with this.
They had images of people like licking flowers.
Licking flowers, yeah.
Or
you get the idea.
Yeah, erotic stuff with nature.
With nature, right. Yeah.
And there's this place called Ecosexual Bathhouse in Melbourne, Australia. And there, like, you get all kinds of weird stuff. Like, they get even little condoms for your fingers.
That makes no sense to me, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, how does that even work? Like, what does your... Anyway.
I guess unless you're trying to caress, like, poison ivy or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't quite get that one.
Yeah.
So the idea behind it, though, is that if you are in love with the earth... You know, if you're in love with the environment, you'll take care of it, right? You'll take care of it better and it'll be better.
That's the impression I got from it was kind of that they want to encourage a love for nature, an erotic love for nature, in that it would perhaps encourage people to take better care of nature.
Yeah.
I think it's just another title for Greenpeace.
Well, in some ways, didn't you kind of feel like that's what they're doing?
I think it's really an active activism. Activist.
Yeah. They call it that. It's a form of activism. Now, yeah. I don't know how I feel about drawing parallels between these guys and Greenpeace, but they have this in common in the sense that, yes, this is a form of activism.
It's
this
to preserve the world.
Environmentalism.
Right? So that's what they want.
I, as you know, I grew up in Portland, Oregon. So maybe that's the other reason why this didn't surprise me. Or I mean, this is just every day. This is ordinary in Portland, man. I mean, this isn't weird.
Go
watch Portlandia if you're...
Portlandia, that is a wonderful show. If you want to get all stereotypes Portland, right? It's all there.
That'll do it.
But I found this really interesting because just kind of looking at it from the biblical perspective too. What you see in the opening chapters of Genesis is that God puts boundaries, right? So there is the boundary lines, if you will, between God humanity, and the rest of creation. And whenever you upset that order, there's problem, like idolatry and all these.
You know, boundaries is definitely one way to put it. And even using the boundary idea, you could still use that in that it conveys the idea of purpose. Mm-hmm. And this is where when I was reading the article, what I couldn't help but notice is how human beings, in our sinful brokenness, we take God's purposes and we twist and we distort them into our own purposes. Mm-hmm. And in essence, this is sin, right? Sin is to say no to God's plans, and I'm instead going to go my own way.
Upsetting of that established order too, yeah, it just like you say, it's a blatant act of rebellion, because yes, this is God's order and we're saying no to that, and we're saying we're going to create our own order. This is the biting of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. We are now defining what is good, what is evil.
You know, this is the 21st century, you know, second apple, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting term that Michael Polanyi actually used, this idea of a second apple, in which he talks about the Enlightenment and postmodernity, that these are the kind of things that follow from a culture that becomes, in the sense of humanism, means that you are your own God. And now you can determine what is going to be correct and not correct. Now, this is where things, though, I think are important. When God lays down boundaries in the creation order that we read in Genesis, this isn't because God's like, you know, I'm a God of rules and laws, and so you're going to do things the way I want. When we look at this in the sense of idea of purpose and design, we see that God has a desire, and that is for human flourishing. Mm-hmm. So it's not just because this is some arbitrary, you know, boundary that's put on, but it's a boundary with the purpose of human flourishing. Mm-hmm. And then this is where things get concerning, when you start to see a society that's falling into this slippery slope, right, where they become their own God.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is this sort of, I mean, we can talk a little bit more about this later, but now we're in this cultural milieu where we read our own meaning into reality. We construct our own, or we attempt to construct our own reality, often to our own peril.
That's right.
And we call that postmodernism, but really, postmodernism isn't post anything. It's just, anyway.
You could just call it modernism.
Yeah. It's just the extension of modernism, right? Yeah. Where you kind
of— It's a logical outworking.
Yeah.
Just in reading all of the four articles that we had there, I kind of came away with a little bit different take, in the sense that I think with every one of these articles, there was a disconnect with relationship, right? The relationship with who we should be having a relationship with, God. Mm-hmm, yeah. But every one of these articles was a relationship with nature, with an Eiffel Tower, you know, right, with what was the other one?
Yeah, so let's move on to the next one.
Before we move on, though, I just want to reiterate that this would be the point that I was making, in that that's the idea of sin. Is sin is to go against the purposes that God's created, and we have been created for the purpose of being in relationship with God.
That's the flourishing. That's the flourishing.
And now we're going to get into these other articles, which are going to show even more deeply. You know, here we are in 2017, and these are the sorts of idolatry that are starting to pop up once you start going down this slippery slope that we've opened up.
Yeah. If you caught what Terry just said there, he mentioned Eiffel Tower, and if you're thinking, what the? Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. There's this lady by the name of Erica. I don't know what her last name is.
LaBrie.
That's right, Erica LaBrie. And she actually married the Eiffel Tower.
Legally.
Legally, and changed her last name to Eiffel, Erica Eiffel.
And there's pictures of her kissing it.
Right. This is called objectum sexuality, where you have those sort of sexual relations or this kind of romantic relations with an inanimate thing. Now, this is similar to ecosexuality, but in this case, this could be like any sort of artificially manufactured kind of a thing, like the Eiffel Tower.
One of the things that's interesting with this, by the way, and now when I read something like that, it's hard for me to take it seriously and go, okay, is she really in love with the Eiffel Tower, or is this just a political statement? Mm-hmm. Either way, the fact that she's able to do it is all that really matters to me.
Right.
Her intention is beside the point. The fact that we have a culture that leans in this direction, we've all seen those people that are in love with objects. But to be in love with an object like this, one of the things that I find deeply concerning about it, and the more we go into different articles, you'll see this even more, is that this is incredibly dehumanizing. There's an interesting philosopher by the name of Martin Buber who wrote a book called I, Thou, or I, You, that talks about these kind of relationships. What you see in this, an I-it relationship or an I-thou relationship, is that when I'm in relationship with a book or a pen or an object like the Eiffel Tower, I have certain duties that perhaps you might say that I could owe to the object. Mm-hmm. And that when I'm in relationship with a human being, that there are certain duties that I owe or not owe to that human being. And when you start to break down that core, that human being, that what we were talking about earlier, that human beings were created to be in relationship with God and relationship with each other, you start to dehumanize that the duty that's owed to when you are in a relationship with another person. And when you start to take an object and take that object into the realm of what you would owe or the kind of relationships you would be with a person, you're in fact devaluing relationships in the process.
Isn't that interesting? It's really ironic that when you humanize what isn't human, you actually end up dehumanizing yourself.
This is the great problem, by the way, of like PETA, for example, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They think that they're taking – oftentimes you'll see them trying to equate animals as human beings in the sense that and for some of it, for good purpose, that you know you should treat animals ethically, you know, like that you should you shouldn't just go grabbing puppies and beating them to death or something like that, right? The problem is though is what they want to do is take the animal and equate the animal or put the animal on the same status as a human being to try to make that argument. But that never is what the argument – that's never the argument that's made. What happens instead is you're taking the human being and you're bringing them down to the level of an animal.
Can I make a point that she made? She was talking about – this might be on a grand scale, this Eiffel Tower idea of relationship. Mm-hmm. But she says – or somebody said, doesn't it – on a smaller scale, don't we do that with smaller things like – a ring that you got from your grandma.
Right. You have sentimental feelings about it.
Right.
That's in relationship to another human being.
Exactly.
Though.
Now the ring, I mean, I have a ring right here on my right hand here. This golden ring, this my grandmother gave to me. This is a rosary ring. She's a very devout Catholic lady.
Yep.
She gave it to me as a gift. Now, I'm very attached to this ring. I wear it all the time and I hardly ever take it off. Why? Because when I look at this ring, I don't have any special feelings towards this ring. My sentimentality isn't directed towards the ring. It's directed towards my grandmother who gave it to me.
Yeah.
Right? If, for example, if I had found this ring just randomly in a forest, I wouldn't feel the same way about this.
True.
Because it's about the giver of the gift rather than the gift itself.
See, this is the classic problem of creation in the Bible, is that people in their broken sinfulness desire to worship the created rather than the creator.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See, creation can point you to a person, or creation can be the object in itself that's being worshiped and not point you to a person. It is what's being worshiped. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem of idolatry.
And I'm also finding that in these articles, the thinking is very fuzzy, if you will. Earlier, you mentioned the I-id versus I-thou relationship. All right, that's exactly what I was thinking about when I saw the word relationship. I'm like, yeah, well, there are different kinds of relationship, but that kind of distinction or the nuance isn't really evident in the thinking of these people that are involved in this sort of thing. Okay, of course, I have a relationship in a sense between me and this water bottle, right? In terms of, you know, like what this does for me and what I, you know, do to it, that sort of a thing. But clearly, a human relationship, interpersonal relationship, isn't the kind of relationship that's between, you know, point A and point B.
Well, let's do this with that. Like, I like where you're going with that, Steve. Like, take, for example, if Steve right now were to take his water bottle and throw it across the room, I'd be thinking, man, Steve's having a bad day. But I wouldn't be thinking, you inhumane animal, you know, like how dare you throw your water bottle across the room because Steve owes something to that water bottle. Yeah. No one would say you owe anything to that water bottle. Yeah. An I-it relationship is completely different than an I-thou relationship because if Steve were to take his child and throw his child across the room,
That's a completely different story.
That's a completely different relationship.
Yeah, because and I mention this all the time. I talk often on meta ethics, and this is one of the things that I talk about is what do you need in order to have objective morality? You need objective moral values, moral duties, moral accountabilities, and all three things you need personhood.
Yep.
Right. Because you don't owe to things. Right, you owe things to people. Like if I were to borrow a book from you, I owe it to you to give it back to you. That's duty. A duty is something that you owe. But again, that requires personhood. Now, I can understand people like, you know, people who support PETA and that sort of thing, you know, and how they may project humanity toward like animals and things like that. But when it comes to like inanimate objects and things like that, I mean, how do you even... How do you personify it, right? Mm. I mean, how do you make it, how do you humanize it?
Well, and here's the other problem. I mean, we all inherently understand that there is an hierarchy of value within living creatures, such as if you caught me pulling the wings off of a fly, you might think, well, it's kind of weird, but you wouldn't be disturbed. You know, you wouldn't be that disturbed by it. I mean, I had a buddy who one time tied – he was bored at school and tied the girl in front of him, her one of her strands of hair on a fly, and it started flying. I know, like how that's possible, I don't really know, but I want to believe it's true.
Yeah.
Any rate, but then like I can move my way up, right? And if you find a kid who's pulling the legs off of a gerbil, you're thinking you need some help. Mm-hmm. But right, if you see a kid pulling the legs off of a puppy, you're going, okay, I'm probably going to intervene in this.
Yeah.
But you see a kid pulling the legs off of a baby and you're willing to risk your life to intervene in that situation. And this is the problem though. On the philosophical system of say PETA, for example, how can they make any sort of distinction of value? Mm-hmm. And particularly the human value is a higher value than an animal. I mean, this is where we get into trouble with things like Harambe. I mean, when you look at Harambe, like the gorilla, and a two-year-old, they're made of the same stuff, identically. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe ordered differently, but it's the same amino acids and proteins. The challenge becomes there's less gorillas than there are two-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So on that system, a gorilla is more valuable.
Yeah.
It seems to me like a lot of people recognize this in some sense because they're saying there's only like 400 followers around the world that identify with this lady, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, with the ecosexuals, there's like about 100,000 that were kind of identifying with them. So, I mean, this doesn't jive with a lot of people.
Right.
And if you read the comments in the bottom too, they're just...
This is definitely fringe stuff.
Fringe stuff, yeah. So
the problem is what we're looking at is the philosophical outworkings of our culture. Yeah. And that these are the kind of things that it can and does lead to. And legally, somebody can do these things such as marry the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder like, well, does that person now get tax benefits from that? And what does that say about human relationships and about human dignity? Yeah. Particularly when we're talking about how this devalues humans. I think that we really got to move into this next article though.
Yeah.
This is the important one.
This is killer.
With regards to having sexual relations with machines. And even there's a conference held in London. What is it? Is it in the UK?
In the UK.
London on this topic.
Yeah. It's basically having sex with robots, right? So
So the conference was about what are the ethical
implications
of having sexual relations with a robot.
Right. So if, for example, if and when, I would say when technology advances enough so that you have basically a robot that's specifically built for these things that look just like humans or not.
And we're already – the technology is already there in many ways. I mean, Australia banned child sex dolls from being imported into the country.
From Japan because these dolls were made in the image – made in the image, of like little girls, like 12-year-old girls, that sort of thing.
And we clearly see this as repulsive. Mm-hmm. But it raises some important questions. I had something interesting take place when I was in Toronto just last weekend. I was on a panel while I was out there. So of all the speaking I did, one of the other things I did was a panel discussion on technology. And it was interesting. There was a guy there, by the way, who wrote a great book called Shaping a Digital World. And one of the things that he brought up that I thought was great, his name is Derek Sherman. Mm-hmm. He said that, you know, some things should be automated and some things should not be automated. Mm-hmm. And what happens is as a Christian, you put through the filter, if you will, of technology, God's purposes in the created order. And you put first and foremost this idea that we were created to be in relationship with God and to be in relationship with each other. And again, it's that I, thou relationship. And how should and should not we be using technology? Now, what was interesting is in the audience during the Q&A was an engineer from Google.
Really?
Yeah. And so she was commenting about how even at Google, they, you know, they're wrestling through this as well. Mm. Here's this engineer, and she at times is thinking to herself, should I be creating this or not? Mm-hmm. And if I shouldn't, what kind of matrix should I be using about what sort of things should be automated and what sort of things should not be automated? Mm-hmm. Because one of the other – go ahead.
So that's the next step, right? I mean, we have these robots, but then we move into the AI aspect as well. Mm-hmm. And there's more ethical issues that go with that. Yeah, I heard a conversation with a guy, and he's saying by 2026, Google will be pretty much fully AI in their workings with the people that are on there. It's going to be very difficult to get away from it. So how do we respond as Christians to that?
I think part of the difficulty there is that we don't know what a human being is. And so we often reduce it to what a human person or the physical person is made of,
yeah.
Or we reduce the person to a function. And so if there is no function, so for example, this really shows up in the abortion and euthanasia debate, is if the person ceases to function in some way or has not yet begun to function in that way, then that person can be killed, right? So if somebody, you know, is no longer able to contribute to society economically, right, and work and things like that, well...
And really what we're doing in that way is defining that that's what a human being is.
Right, exactly.
Now, that's why the PhD work that I'm doing, some people wonder, you know, why is that, you know, working on personhood so important? Well, this is exactly why.
It touches on everything.
It right now particularly is touching on everything.
Yeah.
And that is the problem, is that we live in a culture that defines what something is by what something's made of. Mm-hmm. And this is where naturally, though, we define a thing by its purpose. Mm-hmm. So this becomes a challenge, though, when you talk about a human being, because if you live in a secular world that says, well, there is no purpose to human life, it's just a Darwinian process, you know, of natural selection, well, then it's random. And that's the problem. If it's random, then it has no purpose.
And on the metaphysical level too, right, what brought human beings about, it's going to be inanimate things that have no intentionality and so can't form any sort of purposes or things like that. Whereas on a Christian worldview, the fundamental reality is a person, right? So a God, a mm-hmm. person with the capacity for intentionality can imbue or impose or imbue his creation with purpose, including human beings.
And then I would argue that becomes what a human being is. That, yeah, you're made of amino acids and proteins, but that's not what you are. What you are is – that's what you're made of. What you are is the purposes for which you were designed. And we've already talked about that. The Bible's clear. You were made to be in relationship with God and relationship with people. This should guide the way that we use technology. So for example, right now there's a debate happening in Japan because they're wanting to develop robots that can watch children, that can mm-hmm. be like a nanny. And that raises a question. It's not a question of can you do it? It's a question of should you do that?
Right.
Right? When we're getting to this idea of shaping a digital world, you know, there are some things that should be automated. There are some things that should not be automated. So you should automate something that puts human beings in danger, for example. But you should not you know, automate something that goes against the intended order of a human being that is a relational being. And this is why having sex with a robot mm-hmm. is so devastating and dehumanizing, because now, again, you are automating something that ought not to be automated.
Now, let me give you a bit of a – not a pushback, but I'm just curious as to what you're thinking, Andy, especially. Mm-hmm. How do you talk to, I mean, this makes perfect sense for us because we're all Christian, but how would you even start that sort of a conversation and steer it in that direction when you're talking to somebody who doesn't believe in God and who believes that, you know, let's say an atheist who believes yeah. that there's nothing beyond this world?
Well, I think that there's two things that need to take place. First of all, and as you know, Steve, often when I get in a conversation with somebody who doesn't believe in God, they might want to talk about the Bible or a host of other things, but the only place that I'll talk with them about is about their fundamental belief in physicalism. Because that's where everything's coming from. All of their beliefs come from the idea that they think the only thing that exists is the physical. And so then I want to have a discussion there, and I refuse to leave there until I've cast doubt on them that all that exists is the physical. Because the problem is it's a completely self-defeating system.
Right.
That leads into the next areas that I'd want to go into. For example, if you hold to physicalism, you can't hold the science. The reason you can't hold the science is because you can't hold the personhood. It's a system that's dehumanizing. And so right now, the argument that I've been making is that atheism is false because of dehumanization and that it destroys things like science. And so I think this resonates with some people mm-hmm. because they love science so much.
Yeah,
to help them to see that their system doesn't allow for science. Yeah. And the reason I'm saying it doesn't allow for science is because science is an act of exploration.
And discovery.
That's right, which requires the ability to ask questions and to probe beyond what you know. You're going into the unknown, mm-hmm. and you're looking into the way that the universe is. This requires freedom. This requires creativity. You know, this requires perseverance.
This requires the capacity for knowledge.
Yes, and to be able to pass knowledge along.
Which in physicalism, you can't really account for it because you need personhood for knowledge.
And by the way, this requires faith on both the religious and the non-religious. For example, like you said, this requires knowledge. Well, think about all the scientists and how much knowledge they have faith that the knowledge that they have received from those scientists who have gone before them is accurate.
Right.
Because they're building everything off of the past. But how can you trust the past? That's a difficult question for mm-hmm. the physicalist to answer.
How can you trust your own senses? How can you trust – I mean, there are all a host of things that you can't prove with science. Rather, you have to presuppose before you even start the scientific process.
And then you have to answer this question. Well, once I start doing that, what good reason do I have to trust or believe that these things are the case? And that's where I keep coming back to Christianity, because the deeper I get into philosophy, the more I want to run to the harbor of Christianity, because I find in Christianity what I cannot find anywhere else. And in Christianity, you see a system that is coherent. You see a system that can help you to understand the world around you, and that without it leads to a devastating, dehumanizing world that does not lead to flourishing, but in fact leads to death.
I mean, I think it all comes back to relationship with God and how we are find that relationship. And I guess we got to understand where we come from, the image of in who we were created, that He does desire and want an intimate relationship with us. We should seek for that and desire for that on a daily basis. But that real relationship is going to be our only fulfillment as we move forward.
All right. Well, there's tons more that we could talk about. There's an article that we haven't even discussed yet. But maybe we'll save that for another day. But thanks for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about.